Around Comics, Episode 70.
From Chicago, this is Around Comics, a roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I'm joined, as always, by my partner in crime and the co-host of Around Comics, Brian Salazar.
Happy Halloween, everyone! Oh, wait a minute.
Whoops.
Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, yeah. And next is the other co-host of the show, Mr. Tom Cater.
Next, but never last.
TGIF, people. Thank God it's Friday.
Well, the Halloween joke is because we are finally playing an interview that we recorded last Halloween.
And it is aged like a fine wine.
I'm going to say something here that's not very nice, but I was really, really dreading thinking about we wouldn't get this out until
next Halloween.
Until next Halloween, and I was really hoping that nothing would happen to Russ before we got this out. That would be wild. Well.
Russ, of course, is Russ Cochran. He is the vanguard of EC Comics, and we talked with him last Halloween for our spooktacular, but we also had our Comics 101 EC Comics segment that we had planned to release. I had to put that off a little bit, and we just released that, and so now I think it's a great time to play our interview with Russ Cochran.
Or 2 days ago, in case I don't get this out by Saturday.
But before we get to all that, I would like to remind you that this episode of Around Comics is sponsored by InStockTrades.com.
Make InStockTrades.com your source for all of the EC archives. InStockTrades will have each archive available and ready to ship the same day they are released. Don't let this chance to collect some of the most influential comics in history pass you by. At 30% off retail price, InStockTrades.com makes the EC Archives an affordable addition to any collection. While you're picking up the latest EC Archive, don't forget to check out InStockTrades' amazing selection of trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at a great discounted price. All orders over $50 ship free, InStockTrades.com.
Go to InStockTrades.com. Great way to get the EC Archives, which you're going to hear all about in the upcoming interview. I'd like to remind everyone that Around Comics is recorded every Friday at 7 o'clock at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. It's located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you. When you're here, remember to ask about Dark Tower's Pull List membership. It's one of the best you'll find anywhere. Dark Tower has all of the stuff for your comics and collectibles lifestyle. All right, folks. Russ Cochran. Entertaining Comics, or as they were more commonly known, EC Comics, were the most groundbreaking and industry-changing comics in their, or maybe any other, era. The list of creators that worked at EC Comics are a comic historian's who's who of sequential art legends.
What's what?
But without the efforts of one man, the EC library may have been lost and all but forgotten.
And how's on third base? No.
Russ Cochran was a university physics professor turned comics vanguard. For over 30 years, Russ Cochran has kept the EC fire alive. With the release of the EC Archives, many readers are getting their first chance to see the full-color EC library. And now, Around Comics is proud to talk with Russ Cochran. Russ, welcome to Around Comics, and thanks for being on the show.
Boo!
Thank you very much, and boo-hoo to you.
Well, Russ, I think the first thing I'd like to talk to you a little bit about is your history with this project. It goes back quite a few years, and doing my research or due diligence for the show, I found out that you were originally a physicist professor at Drake University in Des Moines, Iowa. How did you go from that to publishing EC Comics?
Well, it's a kind of an interesting story. As a professor at the university, I got to take one trip to a professional meeting every year. And the professional meeting for physics teachers was in New York City in February, usually. And so I wrote Bill Gaines a letter. And I remember how much criticism he'd received for publishing Tales from the Crypt and the other horror comics and so on, and how he'd been accused of ruining a generation and causing juvenile delinquency and things like that. So I just decided to write him a letter and tell him that of all the guys who read the EC Comics here in my hometown in Missouri, none of us had turned out to be axe murderers yet.
Yet, there's still time.
Yet. Yeah, that was it. But I told him I was a college professor and other members of our EC Fan Addicts Club were teachers or ministers or doctors or lawyers, and that we enjoyed the comics very much and they didn't adversely affect us. Well, he wrote me back. And he said, if you ever come to New York, come and see me and we'll go out to dinner. So when I went to the physics meeting in New York, I went to see Bill, and we hit it off. And I started going to the physics meetings every year and started progressively spending less time with the physics meetings and more time in Bill's office, just talking to him and visiting and talking about the EC comics and things like that. And after a few years of this, I would say 7 or 8 years of doing this, Bill and I were at dinner one night, and I said to Bill, those comic books you published back in the 50s, they were just so great. You know, there's a whole new generation of readers out there now. Why don't you publish them again? And Bill said, between bites, he was a big eater, so he said, no, he said, I wouldn't want to do that again. They gave me a real hard time for those, and I'm doing Mad now, and Mad's doing very well, and I just don't think I would do it. And then he paused for a beat or so, and he said, why don't you do it? And you know, the funny thing is, it didn't sink in at that time. When I was on the airplane heading back to Iowa and sort of reliving the whole thing, I remember him saying that, and I thought, well, you know, I wonder if I could do that. So that's when the seed was planted, and I started doing some minor projects before that just to see what would happen. And the first thing I did was a thing called the EC Portfolio, which was a large portfolio of EC artwork reprinted directly from the originals so that collectors could see how detailed and fine the original art was compared to how it appeared in the comic books, which were very cheaply printed. And I did that, and that went pretty well. And so two timelines are running here. I'm getting more and more bored with teaching because I'm teaching the same courses year after year, and I'm getting more and more interested in jumping ship to do some publishing. So finally, in 1974, these two timelines crossed, and I resigned my position at Drake University. I had tenure. I could have been there the rest of my life, but I decided I wanted to do something more interesting and more fun, so I stopped being a professor then, which is 32 years ago, I guess, and started doing my publishing thing then.
Well, what was it about EC that really, you know, got you so passionate about it? I mean, why those comics in particular? I mean, obviously they're at this point, you know, legendary, But
they struck a real chord with me. I, like everybody else my age, I was a big comic book reader, and I read all the various kinds of comic books, and I enjoyed them, but they got to be more and more alike. Superhero comics were, they're great when you're, I suppose, you know, like 7 to 10 years old. And after Superman or Captain Marvel has saved the universe for the 100th time, it starts to wear thin. And and I like the other kinds of comic books. I like the crime comics and the Western comics. And I was just about ready to stop reading comic books. I had a large collection of them, always in my room, big stacks of comic books, and anytime I had wanted to kill a few hours, I'd just pick up some comic books and go through them. But it was getting to where I was less and less interested in them. And then I found my first DC comic, and all of a sudden I realized that the writing and the artwork was better than in most anything else I could get my hands on. And that kind of got me reinterested. And I started trying to collect just the EC comics. And I kind of forgot about all the rest and just started subscribing to all the EC titles and looking for back issues and things like that.
Do you think there was... I think it's really interesting that you were a physics professor and you had such interest in science fiction. Do you think there's some sort of correlation between that, that maybe an interest in science naturally leads to an interest in science fiction?
I think so. Bill Gaines was in school to be a chemistry teacher when his father was killed in an accident and he was thrust into the family business. And he liked science fiction. I think that's why he liked it. And, of course, you have to remember, around this time, the Destination Moon, which was one of the first science fiction movies, Forbidden Planet, some of these groundbreaking Hollywood science fiction movies were starting to come out. So it was a new genre in both in movies and in comics. And it was, you know, probably became the most popular genre for a while there.
Was it ever, did you ever consider sort of giving it up at some point? I mean, has it always been, I mean, I imagine it's been a labor of love at some point.
It really has. No, I've never considered giving it up. It's not easy being a small independent publisher, and I found that there were times when things got tough financially, but about 13 years ago, I talked to Steve Jeppy and John Snyder, who works with Steve, and I realized that if I was hooked into his distribution system, that a lot of my problems would automatically be solved, and I could still do what I wanted to do. So in 1993, I sold my publishing business to Steve, and I've been working for him ever since, but doing the same thing.
Nice. Now, I'm 33 years old, and I came into EC Comics in a really weird roundabout way. My first exposure to EC Comics was Tales from the Crypt on HBO. And what kind of impact did that television series have for you with the EC reprints?
Well, I think it must have helped sales a lot because of the name recognition. You know, the HBO series was good. But many older EC fans like myself were not too enthusiastic about it because they had taken all the stories and injected, you know, into because they're on HBO and because they could do it. There was a lot of sex not that I have anything against that, but it just detracted from the original stories in many cases to me. And I felt that HBO did a great production job on those stories, but basically they just took the kernel of a story and embroidered it a lot, and I wasn't always happy with the way they embroidered it. But it was a popular series, and it did well, ran for, as you know, for several seasons. And the biggest thing it did for me was to increase the name recognition of Tales from the Crypt, which led to better sales for my reprint books.
Sure. Do you think, I think it's interesting you brought up the point with sort of the added nudity to Tales of the Crypt. Do you think that's a challenge to horror in a way, that there's a certain
expectation
that things like that will get added to it when it doesn't need to be? Is that a challenge to the horror genre?
I think it is. Of course, anybody who makes a movie or publishes a comic, they want to sell as many copies or as many tickets to the movie as they possibly can. So when you have a successful series of movies like Friday the 13th or Halloween or any of those, they have found, I'm sure, that by mixing sexual topics in with the horror, that they reach a wider audience. And that's what it's all about, is reaching a wider audience. So I think of the movies like Dracula and Frankenstein as more of a pure kind of horror without resorting to sex to help sell it. But, you know, and in that way, I think, yes, it is a challenge. But some of the greatest horror movies ever made have almost no sex in them.
Well, do you think it's a case that a horror movie or a horror book doesn't even have to frighten then, almost? I mean, because people could watch sort of Dracula or Frankenstein nowadays and appreciate it as a horror movie, but not be frightened by it at all.
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I think I've been watching, you know, every year about this time, AMC mm-hmm. and Turner Classic Movies rerun a lot of the old horror movies, and I've been watching a lot of those this last week. And, you know, some of those are extremely graphic. I think there's another factor, too, that sometimes we miss, and that is that if you were a kid in the 40s, you didn't have a television in your house. You didn't have access to watch movies as often as you wanted to. And when you would go to the movies, to the theater, it would be an experience. And when you watch a movie like Frankenstein in a theater, you have the shared experience of a theater full of people, so that when the monster appears and starts threatening things, you have a high level of excitement in the theater, and there are some people that will scream and some people will laugh, and you know, it becomes a charged atmosphere. And it's not like that when you watch it on a DVD or a videotape, or watch it sitting at home by yourself, watching it on cable television.
I'll come over to your house and recreate it. Anyone out
there?
I'll scream when Frankenstein lunges.
Hey, Russ, going back a little bit to the EC library that you published, those were originally published in black and white. I was wondering what the decision to do that, why you had made that decision to print those in black and white as opposed to the original color.
It was purely an economic decision. It was an awful lot of material to be published, and printing them in color would have just been too expensive at that time for the kind of audience that I could reach.
Well, you know, that leads me to the new, you know, EC Archives, and personally, I'm extremely happy that you've decided to put these out, because I never could get around to getting a copy of the EC Library, and when I heard these were coming out, and they were coming out in color, I was extremely excited about that, and I just wanted to talk about that a little bit, and what was your decision into, you know, going back once again and starting almost from scratch and reprinting everything once again in a new format?
Well, there were a few reprint projects back in the 60s and 70s where comics were reprinted in color on a better quality paper, and the results were very disappointing because the colors would be very garish and loud, distracting even. Some of the artwork that I loved so much in the EC Comics, when you lay a heavy flat color over it, it obscures some of the artwork and takes away from it. So the first thing I saw that was in that area was there was a book, a hardcover book that came out in the 60s called the Horror Comics of the 50s. It's published by Nostalgia Press, and it was a bunch of EC stories that were run in full color. And I found the color very unsatisfying because, for one thing, the color as it was done for comic books then was very primitive. You could only had a very limited number of colors that you could use, and you couldn't do fades and blends and modeling. Like, for example, if you're looking at the sky in a panel of a comic book, that sky would be a solid gray or a solid blue or whatever. What we're doing now is recoloring all those using computer techniques, and the sky can fade or blend to become lighter or darker near the horizon, or we can fade one color into another, and whereby the old way there was only a finite number and not a very big finite number of colors that are possible to use, the way that it's done with computers now is there's basically an infinite number of colors that can be used. So that large areas on the page, like a face, when it's a close-up of a face, in the old EC Comics, that would be colored with just a flat, single color of flesh tone. They had one color that they used for flesh tone. It was a mixture of the yellow and the red that they had available to them, and all flesh tones in all comic books from that period were the same. So if you looked at a Tarzan or a Captain Marvel or a Superman or a Tales from the Crypt, the flesh tones were all the same. And they didn't, there was no modeling to them. I mean, you couldn't see the high, there were no highlights, there was no shading, no darkening on one side, which would be away from the light. With the computer techniques that they use today, I feel that we've got the best of all worlds, because we start with the black and white artwork, and I have to say that it's an amazing tribute to Bill Gaines that he saved all the EC artwork.
Wow.
it was such great artwork, he couldn't stand to throw it away. So he kept it in a vault in New York for all those years, and he paid to store it because it just didn't make sense to him to throw it away. At the same time, all the other comic book publishers, all of them, destroyed the original art. So when you look at a DC Archives or a Marvel Masterworks, those are not being reproduced from the original art. Those are being reproduced with some sort of attempt to reconstruct the original art from the printed comic book. And the sharpness and the detail and the clarity is just not not there like it is in the EC stuff, because with the ECs, we shot the original art and started with that. So when you have the original art to work from, and then you add in the flexibility of modern computer coloring, you have the best of all worlds, I think.
And now, originally, most, or I don't know if most, but a lot of that coloring was done by Marie Severin, correct?
That's right.
And I think I had read, I think it might have been in the intro of the book, you had said that, you know, while you're using computer technology, you know, available today to recolor the books, you were sort of following her original style of coloring the books. And I have to say, looking at, I know a lot of people, when it was first announced that you were publishing these and you recoloring them all, a lot of people were concerned because of the exact same things that you had mentioned.
Right. Well, no, I want to stay as close to Marie's style of coloring as possible, and only just make it a little better and put some more nuances in it,
a little depth to it, and it shows that the first one came out this past week, which is the Weird Science Volume 1, and a fantastic job on it. It's really the first time I've been exposed to that line of the EC Comics, and one of the really nice parts about it is that it has an introduction by George Lucas, and I think that with the other introductions that were seen in the rest of the archive editions, just the impact that these comics had on creators that would come up a generation later and talk about what an amazing impact that they had on them. So what was it like to get those introductions together?
Well, it was really very gratifying. I asked Lucas to do an introduction for Weird Science, and he said sure. And then I asked Steven Spielberg to do one, and he said yes. And John Carpenter is writing the introduction for the first Tales from the Crypt volume. And R.L. Stine, mm-hmm. Who writes modern horror stories for kids.
Goosebumps.
he's doing an introduction for The Vault of Horror. And it's pretty amazing how many creators of movies and comics, George Romero, John Landis, Stephen King, and so on and so on, read EC Comics and sort of got their initial inspiration from EC Comics. So, you know, they were around at the right time to influence this generation, and I think almost to a man, these creators are very appreciative of the start that EC Comics gave them, and they treat the material with a lot of respect.
You know, I was wondering when I was looking at the first volume here, it struck me weird that you're saying that you wanted to print these in chronological order.
Yes, and that was a hard decision because, frankly, the very best EC material comes in the second and third year. The EC artists had not achieved their individual styles yet, and this was something else that Bill Gaines was responsible for. In the days before EC, you didn't know who the artist was, because often it wasn't just one artist. It would be one guy would pencil, another guy would ink, maybe another guy would do faces, maybe another guy would do backgrounds, buildings and houses and cars and things, and the result is that a single page of comic art might have the work of half a dozen artists there. But Gaines encouraged his artists to, rather than telling them to try to all draw alike, he wanted their individual styles to be shown. And so an artist like Graham Ingalls, who had worked for Fiction House and other comic book companies and had been restricted by being told how to do his artwork, suddenly was cut loose. And turned out that Graham Ingalls had an amazing talent for certain types of horror comics, gothic horror with old creaky houses and dust and cobwebs and vampires and werewolves and things like that. And Ingalls was not, well, I shouldn't say it this way. I'm about to say he wasn't as great an artist in 1950 as he was in 1952-53, but that's actually the fact, because Bill Gaines allowed them to express themselves, and in the letters pages that ran in each of the EC comics, they always pushed the artists, and they would say, you know, this issue we have the following story by Ghastly Graham Ingalls. Before long, Graham Ingalls is signing his work Ghastly, and he's stepping up to the plate, and because of the fan reaction, and because they've made him a star now. He's not just an unknown actor, he's a star because everybody likes what he does. And soon, Al Feldstein, who wrote all these stories, he was writing stories for particular artists. They didn't write a story and then say, okay, what artist should we give this to? They didn't do that. They come in on a Tuesday, let's say, and they would say, well, today we've got to write a story for Jack Kamen. So if you're writing a story for Jack Kamen, you come up with a story that's got pretty girls and modern settings and probably not much in the way of gothic horror and so on. The next day they would come in and say, well, not today, we're writing a story for Jack Davis. And so they wrote stories to suit their artist's styles. I don't know that any other comic book companies did this. This was another one of the reasons EC was so great.
The other question I had about the chronological order was, these first six issues are Weird Science 12, 13, 14, 15, and then it goes back to 5 and 6. I think I know why that is, but could you explain why those are numbered that way and why that
sure.
is?
Sure. In their attempt to find good-selling titles, comic book companies would switch the name of a title rather than creating a new title, because if you create a new title, you had to go to the post office and get a new second-class mailing permit for that title, and that costs a few hundred dollars. And so, for example, the EC comic called War Against Crime and Crime Patrol were two of the EC's crime comics. They changed into The Vault of Horror and Tales from the Crypt simply so they wouldn't have to go to the post office and pay that deposit for the second-class mailing permit. So the first issue of The Vault of Horror was number 12, and number 11 had been War Against Crime, number 11.
In comics today, they would just make them all number ones.
Yeah, talk about a 180.
That's completely different.
And then at some point, often the post office would catch them and say, hey, you can't do that. And they would have to go back, and at that point, they would renumber them. So that's why Weird Science, the first issue is number 12, and then you've got 13, 14, 15, and then all of a sudden, number 5. which is the fifth issue, but that's why the numbering is funny.
Oh, that's interesting.
What happened once it got to 13 again?
They did get to 13 again. As a matter of fact, when you buy a Weird Science 12, you have to specify, is this the 1950 issue of Weird Science 12, which is the first issue, or is it the 1952 issue of Weird Science 12, which is worth a lot less?
Oh, how interesting.
There's an eBay tip, people.
Well, you know, looking through the history of EC Comics, and the comic, you know, a lot of comic fans our age coming up look at EC as, oh, those are those comics that were banned and, you know, pre-CCA stuff. And now with the, you know, our exposure to the archives and you know, what we've seen in the last few years, we're really starting for the first time to realize what kind of work and how amazing these comics were, and not even ahead of their time. I mean, they were the time, and comics seemed to take a great leap backwards. Do you feel like these archives are going to be able to show a new generation of comic book fans what was going on in the late 40s and 50s?
I sure do, and I think more than that, when comic books or comic art is discussed as an art form, rather than as just a popular culture, when you look at them as like, what are comic books, and what makes them, why is this art, and what makes it good and what makes it bad, I think that EC Comics will stand out as probably the greatest comic books ever done because of the editing, the storytelling, the writing, and the artwork, and the combination of all those factors to tell a story. And I think if one of my hopes is that everyone who listens to this program will go to their local library, public library or school library, and encourage them to put these EC Archives books on the shelves, because for the first time they're being published in a format that's friendly to libraries. When I did the EC library and the EC comic book reprints and a series I did called the EC Classics and so on, they were not really published in a form which was friendly to libraries. And so after DC and Marvel had sort of paved the way for this in their archive books, I realized that now a library can offer outstanding comic book stories in a format that is something that they want. In other words, a hardcover format in a permanently bound book, and it's the EC Archives books are all Smythe sewn, which means the pages are sewn together and not perfect bound. Perfect bound, you know, when you have a perfect bound book, the 12th time you go through it, a page book comes out in your hand, and you think, uh-oh, my book is coming apart.
Perfect in quotation marks.
Yeah, that's right.
talking about the history of EC, leading up to the show, I did a lot of research trying to learn as much as I could about EC Comics, because I had really just been ignorant in a lot of the history in it. And the further I got into it, the more interesting the story from the very beginning is. I was wondering, have you ever looked at, or has anyone ever talked about possibly an EC Comics documentary? Because to me, it seems like a perfect
a pretty darn good one has been done. There's a fellow named Chip Selby, S-E-L-B-Y, and he produced a documentary about the EC Comics. He was first commissioned, oddly enough, by AMC, American Movie Classics, to make a documentary which would run right about now at Halloween in conjunction with the old Universal horror movies and so on. His documentary came out a couple of years ago and is occasionally on television, but it's available also as a videotape. You can find it in just about any comic book store or, you know, at a place like Diamond Distributors. And it's actually an hour-long show with about two additional hours of outtakes and extras. And anyone who's interested in EC Comics would enjoy this documentary.
Cool. Well, I'll definitely have to look for that. So now you're publishing the first four volumes in the next few months here. And after that, I think your plan is to do two a month for...
One every 2 months.
Oh, one every 2 months. Okay, so we're going to end up with a total...
You just scared him. Sorry.
Boom!
So six in 2007.
So we're going to have... Him. So you're going to have a total of 10 books then. Does that encompass the entire...
Archive?
No, the entire archive is going to take about 40 books.
Wow.
Because we get six issues, six complete issues of a comic book into each hardcover book. And the EC Comics ran from 1950 to 1955. And when you figure out the number of titles that they had, it's going to take somewhere between 40 and 50 hardcover books to contain it all.
Wow, so is that the ultimate plan and goal?
That is the ultimate plan, and that is my goal, to get all that stuff in print and in libraries and institutions, so that you know, it's, when you think about it, the art forms which are native to America include the comic books and certain types of music like jazz music and so on. A person who wants to learn about this prior to now, well, let's say 20, 30 years ago, you go to a library and you say, I'm interested in Benny Goodman, or I'm interested in Louis Armstrong, or whatever. They might have a book about when he was born and when he died and so on, but as far as being able to go in there and listen to the actual music that they created that was the actual art form, you couldn't do it.
Right.
And the same is true of comic books. If you go into most libraries and say, I've heard that EC Comics were the greatest comics around, I'd like to look at some of them. Well, you're out of luck, because the original issues are too expensive and too valuable and
rare,
susceptible to damage, for them to have them and so on. But only now is it starting to be where you can go to a library and find examples of great comic art.
Sure. Well, Russ, I just want to say thank you so much for joining us on the show. We really appreciate it. And thank you so much for keeping EC Comics alive for all these years. It's such an important part of the comic book history of this industry, and it's just such a great thing that you're doing, I think, to bring these out. And hopefully we'll get a lot of new generations of readers that take a look at these books, because they're truly fantastic works. Looking at them and going back and thinking of the times that these were done, and as you had said, you know, Al had written the majority of these stories, if not all of them, and it's just amazing to think that one man really, you know, was able to come up with that many amazing stories and great ideas. But
that's true, and in turn, I thank the guys like Bill Gaines and Al Feldstein, who brought their talents to bear on this, and all the EC artists that blossomed under this system.
Wow.
And I'm very pleased to be able to preserve some of their work for future generations. A lot of those artists went to their graves thinking that they hadn't done anything important, that they had worked in a disposable medium where the comics that they drew 1 year were not available the next year or the year after that, and so on, and there was no way they could achieve any following or any permanent audience. And that is changing now, and I'm very happy to be a part of that.
Well, I'm going to have to start saving up a lot of money if I'm going to have to buy 50 of these things.
40.
Right. 40. Only 40.
Yeah, yeah. So come on, you know, extended editions. You know, keep it under 40 for me.
Well, thanks again, Russ. We really do appreciate it. And here is hoping you have a happy Halloween and good luck with the books.
I hope you have a horrible Halloween.
Oh. Thank you, guys, very much. And I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
You bet.
And I tell you what, we'll look maybe sometime in 2007. We'll get an update on the next slate of EC Archives.
That'll be great. I'll be ready.
Great. Thank you very much,
thanks.
Russ.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
And a big thank you to Russ Cochran. Really, folks, check out those EC archives. Do yourself a favor and not just learn about comics history, but read some great comics.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's, you know, that's one of the things I wanted to kind of say about us talking so much about the EC comic archives and how great they were. It's not just something where, you know, you're looking through rose-colored glasses.
Not nostalgia.
It's not just nostalgia.
They're relevant.
They're still extremely fun and entertaining comics. And that's what makes, amazing art.
Well, we talked about it with Hillary in our Comics 101 segment about Tales from the Crypt, the TV show on HBO, that decades after those
are
comics...
Are you getting paid by HBO to keep mentioning
Tales from the Crypt?
Yes.
The DVD sales have skyrocketed.
It's payola. But those Cowboys stories remained relevant decades after they were done. That's why it was a successful TV series, is because those stories stayed good. They aged very, very well.
They were spooktacular.
They were spooktacular. All right, well, as we finish up here, I would like to remind everyone to help us spread the Around Comics love. There's a few different ways that you can do that. You can download our flyer and take us up on the Listener LCS Challenge. Got details about that at the website. You can give us a dig at dig.com. You can also become our virtual friend at Comic Space, which is www.comicspace.com/aroundcomics. And my personal favorite, you can leave us a review at the iTunes Music Store.
And while you're on the internet looking at the iTunes Store to write a review, you might as well come to the website and check out all the great things that aroundcomics.com has to offer. It's your source for the best in comic book news, reviews, and opinions. While you're there, please take a minute to fill out our listener survey. It lets us know who we're talking to and how we can make Around Comics a better show.
We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. The CPN is a collection of the best comic book podcasts on the net. You can learn more about the network and find more great podcasts at comicpodcast.com.
Just so everyone is aware, we post next week's topic on Tuesdays or thereabout at the forum at www.aroundcomics.com. I would like to thank everyone for joining us today, Sal, Tom, and especially Russ Cochran.
Yes.
And thank you, Russ Cochran, for keeping EC alive all these years.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Cochran.
Everyone have a fantastic rest of your week and weekend. We will be back again next Monday with another full-length episode.
This Monday.
Yes.
Next Monday would be two Mondays.
The next possible Monday.
I've never
you
understood that.
Well, this Monday is the one that's coming up, and then next Monday would
the
be
the
one after
next Monday
that.
You will experience as a human being.
Well,
be the one that you,
where are we going to be in between now and then?
Everywhere in
and around comics.
Delayed gratification.
Would like to suggest a topic? Send us your comments or are interested in becoming a panel member? Email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network. Music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same. Bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2006, all rights reserved.
love you, baby. Yeah. Why you got my love and left me alone? Why you got my love alone? I know that you don't love me. Oh, baby. Baby, love you one more time.